Hello, everybody. It's the Vox Pop, and it's 2 o'clock on today's program, The Copyright Forum. And I take it that everybody can hear me. Joining in the studio today are Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood. They're here to answer your questions about protecting your writing, your music, your art, your poetry, if you went to a private college, poetry if you went to public college. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Everybody has something that they think somebody's going to steal from them or has stolen from them. So give us that call, and we'll answer your questions, 1-800-348-2551. Hello, once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok, and today's show, it's the Copyright Forum, one of our most popular Vox Pop programs. To answer your questions, we have the great panel in the studio. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues and wrote a column for Metroland. Remember Metroland? And Bill Westwood is one of the country's, now who wrote this? Bill Westwood is the country's leading medical illustrator and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Polly Law is an artist and illustrator. She runs an art studio, maintains a website at buttonwoodart.com. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Remember that piece of poetry? If you went to a private college, or poetry, if you went to a public college, and all of a sudden you saw it in a nationally distributed magazine. Remember that? Well, you know, who did that to you? You know, this. Protect yourself about that. So, if it's all right with you, we'll take the first call. Okay, gang?
Let's go.
All right, here we go. We'll go to Marie. Maria, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I recently was at a film seminar and had a brief casual conversation with a law student who's about to take his bar, and he hopes to, I'm telling you this because, you know, you need to know where the information came from, he hopes to specialize in fair use for films.
Uh-huh.
So my question is about music use in video documentaries. If the shooting is on the street and there's music in the background, it seems a little questionable when you go to edit. Naturally, you're using what's called cutaways because you don't just stay on one shot all the time. And the cutaways might come from a different scene, so the music winds up over a picture that is not actually literally synchronized with the shot, and that kind of thing. So anyway, he said that what he would do is look at the film or the video when it's done and do an analysis of the situation, and then if someone wanted it, would write a letter. I think of something called errors and omissions. I'm not sure if that phrase was in about the letter or not. That's where I'm kind of confused. It was a quick conversation. But anyway, some distributors prefer to have this letter or to have the insurance that you can get when you present this letter to an insurance company. And I'm sorry to make this so long, but it is complicated. Anyway, so I'm just wondering if you can talk to me about that. And he said some distributors prefer to just wait until someone complains and then look into it.
Okay.
Do you have any thoughts about
okay.
the legality?
Maria, let's go to the panel.
You're talking about fair use of using music in documentary films. And I think you're saying that there's incidental music that's playing, you know, in the background at things that you are shooting, and sometimes that bleeds over in crossfades and stuff. This area has loosened up considerably in the last 4 or 5 years, particularly since the issuance of fair use principles, best practices for fair use for documentary film. And if you just Google that, you'll find it. It's Professor Peter Jatzy and people at the University of Maryland put out. It's about an 8-page guide that if you read it, and follow its guidelines as best you can, you're going to stay out of trouble. Whereas, you know, before these guidelines came out, you know, almost any kind of music in a film had to be taken out. I talked to the woman that did, what was the movie? Was it Strictly Ballroom or one of those?
Yeah.
And a kid had a cell phone and it rang and it was a 50 Cent tune on the ringtone, and they had to take that out. You know, these days you wouldn't have to do that. Getting an opinion of counsel letter, which is what you're talking about, that someone, and it's nice that this kid offered to do it, but make sure he's passed the bar and has a license before he issues that. Is a good idea, and some insurers will ask for that. And I've written those up for filmmakers and for literary authors, giving them a legal opinion that what they're doing doesn't infringe, and it, whether it's fair use or whether it's an invasion of privacy and all that. I issue that, and so if someone comes after you, you can say you were operating innocently on advice of counsel, so you can't be. And, you know, you can't be held liable for any kind of willful infringement. And some insurance companies like that. Some insurance companies don't care and will review the film and make up their own mind. But that's kind of where the groundwork is right now. Most distribution companies, especially with music, because music publishers can be really porky about this kind of stuff. They're not going to wait till someone comes knocking on their door. They're going to want some kind of assurance, either through an insurance policy or through an opinion or counsel letter.
Anybody else?
Well, what was the name of the guide? The name of the person who did the guide?
Peter Jatzi. It's Jaczi. I think is how he pronounces his name. But if you just do best practices, fair use film, you'll find it.
Okay, Polly?
Thank you very much.
What was that? One second.
No. I just have a question for Paul. Wouldn't this be in some ways analogous to, who was it, Jeannie Benes, who did the Saratoga racetrack? And Saratoga tried to stop her from doing her prints because they owned the copyright on the...
The trademark on the logo.
I mean, how is this different? It's incidental inclusion in...
The Saratoga flat track, the Saratoga Racing Association, were being complete bullies. And I was involved in that case as well. Jenis. Did paintings of the grandstand, and she included the NYRA logo in the painting because the NYRA logo was on the grandstand.
It was part of the composition.
They came and tried to shake her down, and she... I think we've finally settled the case, and she hasn't painted equestrian art since. That should have been fair use, and I think if we'd gone the distance, it would have been found to be.
Okay, Maria,
use.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your call.
Thanks.
Okay. So it's 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a break. It's a little early for a break, but then we'll get more in the second part. So everybody hold on, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs. In downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, amherstcopy.com. La Rock, serving the arts community year-round in downtown Glens Falls since 1972, with gallery exhibits and gift shop featuring handmade items by regional artists. LARAC.org. Kentix Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentixConstruction.com. Nine Pin Cider Works, hard cider made from locally sourced apples, tasting room Wednesday through Sunday at 929 Broadway, Albany. Be revolutionary. Consider the apple. Drink New York apples. NinePinCider.com. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. And Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, a country store since 1923, offering aged cheddar cheeses, nostalgic candies, New York products, and gifts. WaterwheelVillage.com.
We're back, and thanks to Zachary, our wonderful engineer, for bringing us back. Right now, the number I want to remind everybody, I've just been accused by the panel of not giving the telephone number enough, 1-800-348-2551. There's only three people on the phone, so if you get in line, certainly you're gonna have your chance. All right, now we're going to go to Jordan in Albany. Jordan, you're on.
Hi. Wanted to ask a question about using music. There's a band from the 70s whose music I was sampling, and it's on a record label right now, and they're based in London. So I reached out to them asking how they felt about it, and their response was, after a few back and forth emails, what my final offer was. And I'm not entirely sure if I want to try to use the song on a project that I'll sell. Maybe I'll put it on something for free or use it in like a documentary or something. But I'm just trying to figure out, because I'm only using maybe 15 or 20, maybe tops of like 30 seconds of the actual music, what kind of process I do have to go through, and ways to work around using it and performing it live.
Well, performing it live isn't a problem. I mean, that's how Girl Talk and people like that make a living. And whether or not you commercialize it and sell it or use it in a film, it's still going to technically be, you know, a use that you're going to have to get clearance for. You know, in the hip hop world with mixtapes, you know, people use stuff all the time for mixtapes that they give away and sometimes even sell. And within the hip hop world, most people, you know, turn the other way because that's the way that work is done. But
that's probably the way the original.
And that's exactly, yeah, that's exactly what I would be doing.
You know, so you can try it, but if they tell you to take it down, you're going to have to take it down because it's still technically going to be, if it's unauthorized, an infringement, even if it's a mixtape. But
so, did you come to a resolution with the person you contacted about?
I just emailed them back last week, and I told them if they were interested, because I don't have much of a budget, that I'd be willing to give them like half of the publishing rights to, because I'm putting my own lyrics on top of the music and some new instrumentation. If they wanted to do like maintain half of the rights to the version that I put out, I would do that. But I don't have any money, and I'm not even sure how much money to expect to pay them if I were to try to get clearance for it.
And that's a pretty generous offer, and I've seen that kind of deal go. I mean, when Puff Daddy did Every Breath You Take, he did it without any prior okay from Sting and the Police, and put it out, and then once it came out, this is the story I've read anyways, he offered Sting half of his publishing, and Sting has made many, many, many more times on Puffy's version than he did on the Police version.
Sure.
So, you know, they may go with that, especially if the song isn't generating a lot of money right now, you know, for them otherwise.
Right. Okay. All right, great. That sounds great. And when I perform it live, like, is that something different, or is it the same thing with a live band?
Performing live, anything goes, because you know they will be getting, the publisher will be getting paid at least by, you know, ASCAP or BMI, at least hypothetically.
Right.
So you're good to go with that. Yeah, and while you're getting sample clearances, make sure you get it both from the publisher, you know, who represents the songwriter, and from the master, the record company who owns the master rights. There's two different sets of rights you're going to have to get cleared there.
I see. Okay, great. Thanks so much for your time.
Okay. Thanks a lot. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Paul in Shokan. Okay. Paul, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I have what I think is a pretty simple question. A friend of mine did an ink drawing for me years ago of a guitar that I used on some business cards. And I've kind of wanted to use it for other things, and I didn't know... you know, is it basically mine to do with, you know, with whatever I want to, or do I need to compensate him when I use it for other things?
Well, you really should compensate him. I would at least contact him and say,
okay,
explain what you want to do, and say, may I have your permission to use this in this manner? I think that's the appropriate way to approach it.
From the lips of an illustrator.
From the lips of an illustrator.
And I'll second it.
From the lips of another illustrator.
Another illustrator.
Okay, so I mean, he made it for me to use on my business card, but because I'm going to use it for something else, then I should get in touch with him. And,
well,
okay, that sounds fair.
If you really want to get very technical about it, he still owns the rights because he did not transfer the rights to the image to you in writing.
The original and the copyright are two separate entities.
Isn't there an old saying, never ask?
Okay.
I know that you guys are talking about completely.
It's better to ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission. That's the one.
In copyright law, I'd say that's not a wise move.
Okay.
Yeah, but I love what Paul just said. He said, well, what they're going to do is if you use it, they're going to ask you to take it down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do they ever just sue before they ask you to take it down?
Yes, sure. Yeah. Well, look at
rarely,
Stairway to Heaven.
What,
that just settled. Reached a verdict.
Reached a verdict.
But how many millions did they spend to get there?
I know.
Even though it was fair use.
But they were demanding money for a long time. So.
Okay.
So the fact that I paid for it, for him to do it, that doesn't mean that I have free use of it.
Not unless there's a written agreement saying that he or she transferred the copyright to you.
Or it was done before 1978.
when was this done? The art?
Oh, gosh, this was probably done in, I guess probably the mid-90s.
Too late.
Just as a matter of courtesy, really, just tell them you're using it
for
something.
Sure.
Well, also psychology. The question is have you had a falling out with this guy since he did the image?
Oh, no. No, not at all. I'm not really in touch with him, but,
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yep.
Bye. Hang up. Oh, boy. This is such a complicated system. Okay, now let's see. Let's go to Linda. Linda. You're on, Linda.
Hi there. Question about YouTube. I, in the past, have posted or uploaded certain videos to make it easy to watch from different devices for myself or other people who may be interested. And I did the same with my son's wedding. It became a problem because some of the music that was used at the reception apparently was set something off, and I was told by notice from YouTube that I must take it down. Any thoughts, any ideas? Again, this was not monetized. I don't have one of those kinds of accounts.
Yeah, this is really common, and the problem being is that the big publishers have automated bots that comb YouTube, and when they detect a melody that that the publisher owns, they will send an automatic takedown notice. I know the kids at RPI TV were putting hockey games up on YouTube, and they're playing all those sports songs, between periods. And the automated bots were detecting them and making them take down the hockey games. And so, there's not a whole lot you can do about that.
Because I did respond to them. I mean, I wrote a note saying this was for personal use, this is not monetized, and very few people would be interested in seeing somebody else's wedding. I mean, but they, and my understanding is if you complain too much, fight it too much, they may lock up your YouTube account altogether.
They'll just bump you off YouTube.
Yeah, and you're dealing really with machines and not people at this point, and they don't have a whole lot of empathy.
You might want to put it up on Instagram.
I got to remember my password.
Okay. Well, good tip. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Okay. And now, 1-800-348-2551, we will go to Keith. In, of all places, Williamstown. Okay, Keith, you're on.
Hi, Alan. I'm actually driving through Great Barrington as we speak, but I am from Williamstown.
Well, that's,
so my question
that's
is,
better, because Great Barrington is much better than Williamstown. But,
my question is that people have told me that are filmmakers, and I'm a filmmaker, so have said that they've gotten permission from the artist to use the song in their video. And my question is to them is, well, as the artist, kind of they have the right to give away that permission. They have a management company who actually controls that. And that's always a question I always have. So I'm going to leave it to your panel to answer that.
Well, you know, it's going to depend on whether the artist is signed to a record company or a publishing company, in which case the artist may not have the rights to even, give that permission. I encourage filmmakers to find an indie artist, somebody who's totally indie, who, you know, puts out their own music and owns their own publishing. And then you can get a one-stop permission. Plus, you know, indie artists are usually really happy to have their songs in movies. But you're going to have to check and make sure that the artist, has the rights to grant you to begin with. You know, it sounds weird because it's their music, but, you know, they've contractually given away certain rights to publishing companies and record companies, so they may not have the legal authority to grant you permission to put the music in the film.
Thank you.
Okay, and thank you.
Good luck.
Good luck up there in Williamstown. Appreciate it. All right, 1-800-348-2551. Phones are ringing, folks, but get online. That's the whole point here. And we'll go to Robert in Dutchess County. All right, Robert, your turn.
How you doing? My name is Bob, and I painted a teardrop for a prototype company, and my artwork was used for Dove shampoo bottles and a couple other bottles, but I haven't got paid for the job yet, and it's been since 2012. I copyrighted my artwork 2 months after or within 2 months with the copyright in Washington, D.C., and I got it at my house here, and I tried to call the a prototype company, and they only offered me $1,000 for my artwork, which I think it's worth a lot more because it's part of a joint works or a compilation, and I haven't got paid for nothing yet.
You need a lawyer.
Yeah, you definitely need a lawyer at this point.
Is there one here?
I think you clearly have, from what it sounds like,
a very good case.
You have a very good infringement case, and.
Right.
The fact that they haven't paid you, I would think, although I'll defer to Mr. Rapp, I would think would make a judge and or a jury look at it even more favorably towards
right.
you.
Mm-hmm. My question is, a compilation or a joint works is if I'm part of a joint works, there should be royalties coming to me, right? It should be.
Well, why do you say it's a joint work? You said it was a teardrop that's used as a logo.
Yeah, they showed me a fuzzy picture off the internet. It was like a real fuzzy picture of the teardrop, and I re-enhanced it for the bottle on the actual bottles. I actually painted the bottle. I blended the paint light blue into white, and I also cut out the teardrop, the airbrush on the bottle. I painted 6 bottles for a prototype company based out of Minnesota, and they gave me permission to do the bottle, and it was shown to Dove at a couple of big meetings. They approved it, and it was used on the bottles from 2012, 13, 14, I think 15.
They're trying to make it into a work made for hire.
Did you sign any sort of agreement with them at the time you did this?
No, I did not. I have a work order that I got from them, and I didn't sign no papers saying that I was an employee of theirs. I do custom painting myself. I do pinstriping and airbrushing on cars, bikes, and they called me into the prototype company. I painted the bars. I took pictures of all my work.
Right.
And I have the pictures still. I sent them into the Washington, D.C., and I had my pictures copyrighted Yeah, as a matter of fact, I have the copyright.
Yeah, no, you had them registered. You had the copyright registered.
Yeah,
did the words "work for hire" appear on that
work order?
PO? No. I'm sorry?
Not at all. Nope.
Okay,
not
great.
Yeah, it sounds like they're trying to turn it into a
I absolutely.
Firm.
I would be speaking with a good copyright attorney if I were you.
All right. I will contact. That's what I'm. I contacted the one in New York City, and they wouldn't help me. And they had a picture of. Did they have a copy of what I did for them? And I could try to call these lawyers in Manhattan. And they're not calling me back.
But, well,
they're the lawyers for the company, right? For
No.
Well,
this is my lawyer.
Look,
I see.
Look, my experience is I've had many, many infringements. I've dealt with many copyright infringement situations. I will tell you from experience, there are copyright attorneys and then there are copyright attorneys, just like in every other field. And if you find somebody who won't work with you, you contact somebody else.
That's what I will do.
But you've got to be persistent. You're gonna run out of time here if you're not careful.
Isn't it a good sign that they offered him $1,000?
No.
No.
No, it's not a good sign.
No.
No, it's a ripoff.
No.
That's a ripoff.
Yeah, they want him to go away.
Yeah, well, I know they want him to go away, but then it doesn't that admit to some degree that they're...
No.
Okay.
They'd probably make him sign...
I stand corrected.
First of all, I know that Dove is not called Dove. It's called Unilever, and they're in Trumbull, Connecticut. And that's only about an hour from my house. And I haven't attempted to contact them yet, but I got to get a lawyer.
Yeah, get a lawyer. Okay, we got to go. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good luck.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We've got a Roger on line number 6. Roger, you're there.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hey.
My question's a little bit different copyright question, but a little bit different. We manufacture very high-end stereo equipment, and it's obviously a very competitive market. And we've started a program where we are taking some of our competitors' products on trade towards buying one of our products. My question is, can I run advertising where I mentioned those manufacturers' brand names? So like Chevy says, hey, bring your Ford truck in and we'll give you $1,000 towards your new Chevy.
Yeah, you can. I mean, this is a matter of trademark, and it's not infringement. It's fair use of trademark. In fact, I think it's explicitly allowed in the trademark statute for comparative advertising. You know, as long as you don't say something
is
negative, as long as you don't slander the other product, you can say yours is better if you can back that up with bench tests and stuff. But yeah, you can mention other brands.
What we want to do is say we want to take trade-ins from these particular companies. If you own this piece of equipment, you can trade it in towards a new piece of our equipment.
Yeah, I don't see any problem with that at all.
Yeah, you're not disparaging them.
As long as it's true. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Bye.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, we got 3 minutes to go before we have to take a break. And I'm looking at this here. Lena, we'll go to line number 1. Lena, you're on.
Hello.
Hi, Lena.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
We're all good.
So, compared to everyone else's question, mine seems very small and simple, but I've recently begun making collages. And I wanted to start selling them on Etsy. And I don't know if I'm allowed to use, like, I've used a bunch of pictures of James Dean or just, like, old celebrities. I don't know if there's a copyright that I would get in trouble or if I can list it as sound art. I'm not sure.
Are you going to be selling the original collages or prints of your collages?
The originals.
Well, then you're okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you're okay because you're just reusing an original piece that you have. It's once you start, and again this is we've talked about this with Roselle is
that's my wife
with the lovely Roselle. once you start doing prints, then the ground then it gets a little murkier. You guys agree?
Yeah, I mean I just have a problem with that kind of stuff anyway, but. But
what kind of stuff? You mean collages?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, but there's been some very famous cases here, right?
Oh, yeah.
Which,
doesn't mean I have to agree with them.
No. Right. Well, it's the outcomes that become more telling than anything else, I think.
But, yeah, it's where you're making multiples and making copies is the thing.
Yeah, I'm not looking to start a huge business with this. I just kind of do it for fun and thought maybe I could earn a little extra cash.
But if you started making greeting cards or postcards or something like that out of the images, you'd be running into definite problems.
Yeah, if it takes off, you call us back.
Who? Okay. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Let's see if we can get another one in here. John's been waiting for a while from Stone Ridge, so we'll go to him. John from Stone Ridge, you're on.
Yeah, great. Hi, guys. Listen, here's my question. Colleagues of mine and I have developed a smartphone app that's based on the GPS function in your phone. And what it does, it pops up map little pins that show sites of African-American history wherever you might happen to be. And we've got positioning in 50 states and Canada and places like that. So we have a lot of coverage. The thing is, when you're walking down the street, one of these pins pops up. If you tap on it, the screen opens up. There's an image of whatever it is in this house. Charlie Parker wrote such and such and such and such, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a picture of the house. There's a link maybe to a website describing this. But also, we're able to provide sometimes video and audio links to the user so that if they tap on it, they can hear Charlie Parker playing or see a video of him playing at Birdland. And one of the things that we haven't yet quite figured out is this fair usage? It's a not-for-profit. This was grant-funded to begin with, and we're going to turn it over to a university to run once we get it, all the tech stuff set up. So our question is it fair usage for us to tap into YouTube and Google and all these other sources, pull these streaming things up and put it on the app?
So that's where you're getting them from. They're from YouTube. You don't have this stuff, you know, on a server somewhere.
We're getting it from YouTube.
I'm going to say you're probably okay. But I would also, when you give it to the university, you know, you make sure you have an indemnity clause that you're not responsible if somebody...
Yeah, or give it to a state university.
Yeah, right. Because this is sticky stuff, but everybody does it. And I think if you're pulling in YouTube and stuff that's otherwise available on the web, you are, in most instances, going to be... okay. Because people embed, you know, YouTube videos all the time, you know, in news and on their blogs and all that kind of stuff. And they're, you know you're watching YouTube.
I think
you're generally going to be okay.
But
okay.
This wouldn't be a link to the site. It's just a straight embed.
Yeah, I know. Well, what happens, it'll say, yeah, you tap on it and it opens up.
This kind of thing's gotten to be very popular.
I think, 10 years ago, my answer might have been differently.
Gotta let you go. Thank you very much for calling. Got to take a break.
Thanks for the advice, guys.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Okay. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from the Lake George Association. Working to protect Lake George water for more than a century, lakegeorgeassociation.org/join. The Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, an undergraduate theater program in liberal arts with concentrations in design and technology, theater studies, and performance. newpaltz.edu/theatre. Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans with weekly tastings, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins. GrapesandGrainsWine.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, custom exhibits, interactive media displays, and commercial casework for corporate interiors, museum installations, and trade shows. EmpireExhibits.com. And A.D. George Construction, for over 25 years, serving the Pioneer Valley's residential construction needs. Remodeling, additions, kitchens, bathrooms, porches, home office space, and more. From the design and planning to its completion. 413-256-6752.
And we're back. Thank you very much, Mr. Zachary. Let's see here. I'm looking at the official numbers of how long people have been waiting, and we've got a Michael on line number 4. Okay, Michael, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for taking the call. Sure. My question is a little bit different. I really have no experience or personal use for sort of copyright info, but in the case of parody and satire, is there sort of a loophole in that if you're using, let's say for music, for example, using music as a parody, say for political comedy or something along those lines, can you get away with more? Do you have to necessarily get permission if you're kind of altering it and using it in that setting? And sort of as a caveat to that, or as a sort of supplement, if it is used that way, would you assume or presume that the original artist goes along with the sentiment of the parody?
The answer to your second question is no.
This is murky again, but if you're, you know, doing satire, using a popular song and changing the words, and you're not making a comment on the original song, you're going to have less likelihood of success than if your song, if your new lyrics refer back, at least in some way, to the original song. There was a case a couple of years ago, I think it was involved Mitt Romney or McCain or some, and they were using Don Henley's Boys of Summer with changed lyrics. And boy, if there's somebody you don't mess with in this kind of stuff, it's Don Henley of the Eagles. And, you know, and he shut them down pretty quickly, and the courts agreed that, you know, you can't do that. You know, and generally, I mean, you hear all the time mostly Republicans using rock and roll songs and then, you know, being told quite rudely to stop, you know, by the artist to stop using them. And that's murky too, but the artists always argue that there's an implied endorsement involved when you use, you know, their song. If in the middle of a campaign, there's an implied endorsement, and you know, whether that's true or not, but at least, you know, most of the candidates get embarrassed and stop using the song.
Well,
but then when you're doing regular sort of comedy, like Capital Steps, for example, we see them do a whole bunch of stuff and it's hilarious, they're great. But do they have to get permission to use those songs when they're altering the words and the lyrics?
Well, there's usually some relevance of the song to the topic that they're parodying. So. Mm-hmm. That keeps it in the clear. When I'm talking about illustration in this context, I can't put Mickey Mouse in just any illustration I want. If however I was illustrating an article about the ecological consequences of on the Florida Everglades on Disney's development, and I had Mickey Mouse rampaging through the Everglades, tearing up, you know, ruining the environment, that would be a valid use of Mickey Mouse.
So you'd have relevance there on your side. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Welcome. Bye. Okay, now let's see here. Oh, 50, that's an easy one. John in Albany, number 3. John, you're on. John.
Hi. I applied for a trademark on a mark that I've been using for, you know, 10, 11 years, and I got back 2 conflicts, I guess. I don't remember what the term is. And so the attorney I was working with suggested pursuing coexistence agreements, which made sense to me because the names really are not even really all that close. We got back a coexistence agreement from one of them. And then the other one is a really kind of wacky interpretation of it being the same, but we haven't gotten any response from them over months. So I'm curious. I assume that a company doesn't have any, like, responsibility to respond to something like that, and that my only option would be to try to get their mark overridden. Is that accurate?
Yeah, or to argue that there's differences between their mark and yours, between either the goods and services are different or are sufficiently different that there's going to be no confusion, or that the marks themselves are sufficiently different there's not going to be any confusion.
The attorney is talking to kind of implied that you really couldn't, once they did a finding that it was overlapping, or that you really couldn't argue that. Is that true or not?
Oh no, you can, because you know these are examiners who are fairly low level. They're usually early attorneys, and
Kafka did that, you know.
Yeah, did he? Was it?
Yeah.
But he makes they make mistakes all the time, and if you give them a well reasoned argument, very very often they will change their mind. Or if you call and talk to them, it's a much more open system than it used to be. They make decisions that are all over the place, but you can convince them to change their minds.
Okay, moving right ahead. Okay. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye. Okay, now we have to look here. Oh, Marie, on line number 5. Marie, you're there.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is about a children's picture book that I've written and that I'm illustrating. And it's based on a PATH train car that used to run between New Jersey and New York. And this PATH train is in almost every illustration. So there will be something like 24 illustrations of it. And on the train, there is the PATH logo that they used 15 years ago, because this particular train survived the collapse of the World Trade Center. And so I discovered for various reasons that I needed to go and check with them to make sure it was okay that I had it. And they took months to get back to me, and eventually they said, yes, you can use our PATH logo, and by the way, you can also use the images of the World Trade Center towers in your book as long as you sign this indemnity clause. And then they told me that I needed to get a lawyer to make sure that the clause was good for me as well as for them, good for me. So my question is, do you think that really makes sense? It's not a logo that they even use anymore, and so I guess it's most, what are your thoughts about it? I'm still waiting to hear from a lawyer that I finally did engage. What are your thoughts about needing to get it, and especially if I decide, look, I can't sign this clause, then is it really true that the World Trade Center towers, I would need to get permission to put those in a book?
I don't.
So it's the logo, it's the towers, and it's the indemnity to protect them, not me.
Them from them being sued, and from whom would they be sued? I mean, the Port Authority.
Well, that's a very good question. I don't really understand that.
So it sounds like it may be they're just sort of over-lawyering it, because if they own the World Trade Center and they own the PATH trains, who's going to sue them and for what? Particularly for a benign use like yours, for a children's book about a train. So it may be, your concerns. I definitely have a lawyer look over the indemnity clause and see what it says. But, my thing is that you probably don't need the permission in the first place.
No. Well, to use the logo.
But she's not representing herself as PATH. She's just, this is a train, you know.
But if you use a Harley-Davidson logo in an illustration, you can get into trouble. So
maybe, because Harley Davidson are big bullies.
Well, I understand that, but we don't.
We are talking about New Jersey.
Exactly.
Hey, you may be dealing with a vice president here. Okay, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. All right, now looking here, we've got a Dan on line number 8. Dan, it's your turn.
Hello.
Hey, Dan,
Hello.
It's your
At
turn, and you
last.
Have to, and you have to be brief because we're running out of time.
The question is, if you have a commercial release of something and somebody posts a live version of it on YouTube that you don't want up there, what is the process for getting it down?
You contact YouTube.
Yeah, you look in the terms of service for takedown notices, DMCA takedown notices, and they'll give you the procedure, everything. They'll tell you what you have to say and what you have to show them and in what order, and there's a number that they'll accept it. But if you think somebody's got infringing stuff up there and you don't want it, take it down.
Well, it's not necessarily infringing. It's just that I just don't want it up there.
Why?
Well,
does it reflect badly on your product? Does it reflect badly on you?
Well, You could say that.
Yeah. Well, you made the call.
I mean, you know, is it libelous?
Not in the context of the song, probably not.
Okay, we're gonna let you go. We want to get one more call in here. Thank you very much. Okay, so now we can go to Carl on line number 6. All right, Carl, it's got to be very quick. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. I wrote a proposal for a one-hour TV show a few years back that a friend pitched to a large international corporation for sponsorship. And a friend, about a couple of months ago, sent me a link to the video. The show was produced not by that entity, because that was sold off as another division and there were other legal complications with it, but it follows the outline of the show segment by segment. Is there any recourse?
Did you register the proposal?
I did not.
The treatment.
Yeah, the treatment.
And was there any kind of non-disclose agreement?
Probably not the friend who pitched it, no.
You probably can. It's a tough road to hoe because there's hardly a hit show out there that doesn't get hit with claims like this, and they defend.
Well, it wasn't so much a hit show. It was done as a one-off, and they did, but it was produced because it had, I guess the Doogie Howser guy as the voiceover.
Yeah.
But it wasn't released, TV-wise. It was put on a website.
Okay. There's recourse, but it's a steep climb, and the fact that it was only webcast and not put on TV means your damages, might be fairly modest. Yeah. They might not
be worth going after.
But
in the future, to register things like that and to put a non-disclosed agreement in with it just helps protect you a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Okay. Now, we really are running out of time here, guys, so I'm going to read what somebody wrote.
Okay.
And they wrote down, okay, and maybe it'll help, maybe it won't, but we only have a couple of seconds. John from, of course, Johnstown, is working on a 6-volume memoir. Would like to donate the money from the project to charity when he dies. How long does copyright go on after his death?
75 years.
75 years. That's the answer. All right. Hang up. All right. Is there any other that is sort of explained?
If they could all be this easy.
Yeah.
And Audrey wants to know, she's written a book that uses another author's content. Is that okay?
Yeah. How much and what author?
What author? When was the original? If the original content was published before 1923, she can do whatever she wants with it. If it wasn't, she's... she said content, so it sounds like we're talking verbatim here.
She's on thin ice. If it's,
you should probably get permission.
Okay, thank you very much for that. And that is the show for this week. We are out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in. Two people, John and Audrey, who I just mentioned, who are left on the line. We apologize to them. But a special thanks to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp for joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Stammels, Stringed Instruments, Downtown Amherst, and Poughkeepsie, providing sales, service, and rentals of violins, violas, cellos, and bows. Restorations and appraisals open Tuesday through Saturday. Stammelstring.com. All right. And the Lathrop communities, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for over 25 years. Independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley, lathrop.kendall.org. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost 3 decades, shannonrose.com, and Old Castle Theater, downtown Bennington, Vermont, presenting the family musical Big River, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, with music and lyrics by Roger Miller, July 8th through the 24th. Oldcastletheater.org for tickets. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell for stepping in and answering the phones today. Our producer's Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Now stay tuned for a news update.